You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, planet, all six areas of the healthful living model, and you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host, Julie Matthews.
I'm a certified nutrition consultant.
And we are back from our late August hiatus and back here at the helm of Reality Sandwich every Thursday at noon. And today we're going to be speaking about something near and dear to our hearts and really near and dear to every human being on the planet trying to be healthy and sustain themselves in a inherently human, natural kind of a way. And we're going to be speaking about food today, Julie.
Yes, not only food, but highly nourishing and delicious food.
And it's just becoming increasingly apparent to any of us. It doesn't matter who you are or what your status is. Just the real nature of our world today is such that we need to be more aware of what we're putting in our bodies, where our food is coming from, the quality of it, the nutritional value of it. How is it serving us? Is it deleterious to our health? Just more and more every day we're getting news and information about the nature of our world that just piques our interest and says to us that we've got to be a little more knowledgeable in our own, in our own well-being. And to that end, we're going to speak today about some folks that are really providing significant service in our local Bay Area community here, directly serving the food, nutrition, health needs of a large number of people. So let's learn more about Three Stone Hearth, community-supported kitchen over in Berkeley. We have on the line today a couple of the founders of it. Who do we have on the line with us today, Julie? Who's joining us?
We have Portia Combash and Jessica Prentice. And I will, instead of reading their bio, I will let them speak a little for themselves on who they are.
Are you two with us on the line?
We're here. Yes, indeed.
All right. So who, Jessica, do you want to start and give a little background on who you are and why you started Three Stone?
Well, I'd be happy to. I was trained as a chef at the Natural Gourmet Cookery School in New York City in 1996 and came back and worked at the Headland Center for the Arts as the chef for 4 years and had an amazing experience of food in the context of community, and never really wanted to work in a restaurant or any kind of anonymous cooking situation. And after that, I got into sustainable agriculture. I worked as the director of education for the Ferry Plaza Farmers Market and wrote a book about our relationship to food called Full Moon Feast, and joined up with these guys to start the CSK as a grand experiment in bringing food back into the context of community and being both cooked and served within community rather than on a, you know, corporate agribusiness factory scale as so much of our food is today.
And Portia?
Yes. Well, I've been in the food industry for over, well, my whole life. Let's see, since I was 16, my first job at a bakery, using regular white flour, white sugar, and those things. And those all became a detriment to my health. And so through the years in my cooking, I've learned to use alternatives. And now, having gone to the Natural Gourmet School of Cookery in New York also, was exposed to the teachings of Sally Fallon and Weston A. Price, and turning back to more traditional methods of cooking. So my background is extensive in cooking and catering and just understanding and loving food, and now I'm having a deeper understanding of where it's coming from and helping share that with people here.
Wonderful. And so Three Stone Hearth, as you mentioned, is what you call a CSK. What is that? And, what is it?
Portia and I can't see each other, so we can't decide who's going to take
which. Yeah. Well, let me give I'm Portia, and I'll give just a little synopsis. The overall picture, and I think Jessica puts it very well, is a CSK, so similar to a community-supported agriculture, which many people are used to, going directly to farmers and subscribing to a box of food that is what's available seasonally. So you buy a season's worth of food, and you support the growers directly. Jessica and the five of us here, it is a five worker-owner cooperative. So there's Misa Kuketsu, Larry Wish, Catherine Banger, Jessica Prentice, and myself, Portia Combash, and we were brought together at Jessica's kitchen table. And we found that we're trying to create a model that actually other people can do. So, Jessica, if you want to take it from there.
Well, yeah, exactly. As Portia said, it's sort of inspired by community-supported agriculture. I think what people don't realize often is that the reason that we have such bad food, part of the reason that we have such bad food in this country is that we don't particularly value food. And so most of the food that we eat is grown on these factory farms. People are aware of that with the meat, but also with almost everything is large agribusiness farming, and then it's processed in these huge factories. So most of what we eat in this country is factory food. Mm-hmm. And what small and local farms have done is try to bring food back onto a community scale, operating more locally and more small scale. And so we're sort of inspired by that in terms of the kitchen, too, because there's a long distance between, a head of broccoli that's grown on a local farm and dinner. And we're sort of the place that's taking on that challenge of how do we get all this great produce turned into meals that people actually sit down and eat. And so we need community support to do that. And so that's what the community-supported kitchen idea is that, most of the chopping of broccoli is done by volunteers and the five worker owners and interns who come and help out in the kitchen. And then our subscribers who are willing to put their money where their mouth is and pay a little bit more for food that is processed with a huge amount of care, attention to their health, and care for the planet and ecological issues. And we package everything in mason jars, which people pay a deposit and return.
Hmm. Wow.
Now, is this community-supported kitchen idea, is it a new concept, or is it something that we're kind of bringing back from the past? Because when I hear about it, it kind of harkens back to, to the old days. In some way, where I just envision things being more community oriented, more health focused, more in touch with nature in some regard.
Well, it's really a combination of the old and the new, I think.
I think that's
a new idea. Go ahead, Courtney.
Yeah, Jessica's absolutely right. I mean, it's a very old tradition to cook in community, and that's one of the wonderful things about Jessica's book. Is that she speaks of that, the hunger for connection, and that connection is community and food. And as you know, most traditional peoples, they don't go off in their little kitchens and then put something in the microwave and eat it. What they do is they work through the seasons preparing foods, preserving foods, and working on that old tradition of what was passed on, utilizing what is in nature. And I think our concept is to bring that to a modern situation, and also it is a new concept, community-supported agriculture, which has been around for a while, but we've never seen another community-supported kitchen. And our idea, ultimately, is to get others to do this. We don't want to be the only ones. We want other people to do in their direct, within their 100-mile, maybe 200-mile radius, to try and get a community-supported kitchen, close by, get one in Santa Cruz, get one, wherever someone feels the need to create this kind of food and community all in one hearth. That's why we call it a hearth.
Are there any other people that have approached you with an interest in creating one of their own?
Well, I'll take this one, Jessica. The interns that we get a lot of interns coming all the way from New York City, Virginia, Washington, all over the U.S., and what they do, often they're attracted, not only maybe they have a culinary program that they're in, they want to explore different ways of using that rather than a traditional restaurant like Jessica was mentioning, to explore different ways, and often we will have a lot of enthusiasm for people who do want to do this. And no one has made the jump yet or the leap, but their intention is to come study with us, work on a plan, and then take it home. And Jessica, I don't know if you've heard of any other people who have made more of a step, but.
Yeah, I mean, people are sort of playing around with the idea. The thing is that it's easy to think about an idea. It's much harder to put it into practice, and that's been, you know, the great challenge of the past, you know, couple years. We had a year of planning of this business, and then we've been in business for a little over a year. And, I mean, this was an idea that was floating around the back of my head for years, but, you know, an idea is just an idea, and I think there's a lot of people out there that are attracted to the idea, but actually figuring out, you know, all the, you know, who, you know, it takes a group of people, I really think, to do this, and it takes, you know, a certain amount of startup capital, and it takes the space, and, you know, there's all these actual things that it needs, and we haven't been until now really in a position to really help anybody else do those things because we were just trying to figure it all out ourselves. But we're going to get there. We're getting there slowly but surely.
Wonderful. Well, I'd love to, towards the end of this, talk a little bit more about how it's going and what you success you've had so far, but I want to get into the food here.
Yeah, let's get into the food, and let's get into that, you know, really the why behind all of this and the need for it and your vision and your mission and your passion behind this. And but let's start right off with quality, the quality of food. What are your respective takes on a couple things? Number one, what's going on out there sort of in the mainstream with respect to food quality that people are either purchasing for themselves in...
Yeah, how does this differ from, say, going to the deli over at the prepared foods over at Whole Foods, for example?
And, yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. And then I'd love to hear more about, you know, what goes into the creation and the you know, the nutritional component of what you're creating there. Because I'm just getting a feeling that there's something really deep and personal happening that that adds so much value to the food.
Jessica, do you want to take the first part?
Yeah, well, I thought maybe you could talk about the difference in quality since you worked in some of those deli sort of situations. Why don't you talk about that, and then we'll...
Well, that's true. I have worked in more of the standard. I mean, every place I've worked is very high quality and wonderful foods. The difference and what we're getting these days is, it's really hard. You don't know who has prepared your food. You don't know where your food is coming from. You know, the idea of, and I'm sure you all are familiar with this, the idea that something is labeled organic, that doesn't mean it's the best possible for you.
Mm-hmm.
We buy some organics, and certified organic is a great idea, but the truth is that it is now certainly a corporate sort of logo or a tagline. I don't want to slam Whole Foods. I'm not going to say anything about Whole Foods. I will say that there are pre-prepared foods that have an illusion of health, and they seem like they'd be good, and they've got they've got all the right words on them. But the truth behind those words is a little different. And what I can say about our food is that we not only source things that are organic and local, but sometimes they're not certified organic, and that can actually be a better product. And we look deeper into our relationships with the farmers, and I think that's what I think part of the beauty of Jessica having had her past relationship with the education through Quesa. She had a good understanding of the farmers, what they go through, what their choices are on the farms. And sometimes it's economically not feasible to call themselves certified organic because of what they have to go through. It's a money thing. And what's great is that we can have a relationship with the farmers, visit the farm, look at their practices, and feel good about supporting them. And so I think it's more of a grassroots level, really knowing where your food is coming from. A good example is our eggs. We get them from Clark Summit Farm, and we get chickens from them. And these are pastured animals. These are animals that actually live the way animals are supposed to live. Our food is so anonymous, as Jessica was mentioning before. We don't know what life it's had. And in our situation, we're making it very clear that it is, we have a good idea of where it's coming from. One small side is that often we get volunteers who come to us who have been struggling with veganism or vegetarianism, and they are ready to take the plunge into meat, and we are one of the only places that they will do that because the meat that we have here is sourced so locally and so carefully that they feel that this is the cleanest possible way to provide that sort of nutrient into their body.
Mm.
I'm proud of that.
Jessica, anything to add?
Well, yeah, I mean, Portia just said it beautifully. I think, you know, part of what makes our food so special is that you do have this sense of relationship. I mean, you see the kitchen where it's made. You see the five people who are in charge of making it. You can be one of the people that helps make it or meet the people that help make it. And we also have lots of opportunities to connect with the farmers. I mean, we have full moon feasts every month where we bring farmers and ranchers here and have them speak. So, you know, Clark Summit Farm was featured at a last feast. So if you wanted to talk to the people who grew the eggs that you were eating that night, they were right there, and that's a very special opportunity for people. And in addition, with these farmers, I just got interrupted here. We really give people the opportunity to learn more and to be totally transparent about everything from what the chickens eat to where their space is. All of that context is so valuable to people in an anonymous food system. And so I just don't think there's anywhere else where you really get that, where you really get food brought back into relationship. You know the people who grew it. You know the people who made it. We have people actually go up to Clark Summit Farms and pick up our eggs. We have people go up and pick up we get cheese from St. George, and volunteers help us with that. And so they get to drive up, see the cows on the pasture, go into the cheese room, see the cheese, you know, aging, pick up the wheels of cheese, or, you know, go to Clark Summit, see the chickens on the pasture, go and, you know, actually pick up the eggs and bring them down. I mean, that's the idea behind a community-supported kitchen, is that everybody's involved, and you can engage at the level that feels comfortable to you. You can have as much relationship with your food as you want to here, and I think that's very special. Whereas in the factory food business, every effort is made to keep you out. They don't want you to see how the animals live. They don't want you to see how the animals die. Mm. They don't want you to see how the food is grown. They don't want you there. You can't be there because in many cases the situation is too toxic. And that's really tragic that, you know, and that's when you sort of need these certifying agents to come in and try to make sure that there's some semblance of you know, ecological sustainability or some semblance of humanity. But the very best way to ensure that your food is being raised in a way that you would approve of is to have a direct experience of it. And there's no certifier that can take the place of that.
Mm. So briefly, let's talk a little bit more about that concept of organics, because I think it's so important now, because finally people are catching on that organic is good, or quote organic is good, and that pesticides are not good, and that the types of nutrients that we put in the soil and all of these things are really important to the quality of the food we're getting. And part of the challenge is that organic standards are being so watered down that the mainstream is finally catching on, but now organics isn't really meeting the needs of a lot of people because it's not what it used to be. So I think we're kind of in between organics, which has been, like I said, watered down, and something new, which hasn't, I suppose, come about yet. And my understanding from what you're saying is that there's more than just the certification that costs thousands and thousands of dollars to be certified organic. There's also levels of subtlety beyond that make the food really actually healthy or not healthy. And that especially applies for things like animal foods and things. So maybe you definitely touched upon it, but I'd love for you to maybe go into a detail or two about, I don't know, maybe some of the milk you use and how it's different, or some of the eggs or the chickens and how they're different, or the produce or something. Any of that a little bit further for people that really haven't, maybe they're just getting into organics and now we're telling them that organic might not be good enough. So,
and also, why is it so important for us to understand these distinctions about the quality of our foods?
Jessica, if you could address the last question, and then I'll just put this in. I think it's important for people to understand, one, where their food is coming from, and two, what their food might do for their overall health, and then to feel what that is in the body.
Hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And just to give an example with eggs, you know, that you can buy lots of eggs in the supermarket that say free range, but unfortunately that label doesn't necessarily mean that those, and usually it doesn't mean that those chickens are actually pecking around in pasture. It's a fairly minimal requirement that can pass that label, and it's very, very not regulated. Whereas the eggs that we both use in our kitchen and sell retail are truly pastured. We've been up. The chickens are, you know, there's a moving coop that they pull from field to field. The chickens are out in the green grass pecking around. They're eating bugs. They're eating grass. They've got feed provided for them in the coop, and it's basically a buffet. They eat what they want to eat in the proportions that they want to eat it. And what that means in terms of the eggs is phenomenal in terms of health. If you look at, say, omega-6, omega-3 fatty acid balance between a battery-produced store-bought egg, you know, a factory egg, and the eggs that we're providing, it's just night and day. And unfortunately, you know, Americans have been trained to think, well, eggs should be cheap. They go to the grocery store, they buy the cheapest eggs possible, and then when they have, you know, nutritional problems and deficiencies or health problems, and they get prescribed supplements, and then they go and they, you know, buy, you know, an oil that's supposed to make up the difference. But if you actually eat food that is produced in the way that has the most integrity for the animal, for the earth, and for nutrition, I think you do a huge amount to just prevent disease and to just eat well. And the only way, really, that you can find foods that are raised with that kind of care is to look into alternative venues. You're not really going to find food like that in, you know, your local supermarket. You have to start going to farmers markets or CSAs or, you know, a CSK like us if you want to find, you know, truly pasture-based beef, chicken, pork, eggs, dairy products, and so forth. So it's, I think it's really, it's important not only if you care about animals, but it's important if you care about your health and if you care about keeping, you know, a green belt, you know, of agricultural land around a city like ours. Is, you know, these are mostly local foods, and the farmers can only stay on this expensive local land if they're able to make a good living doing it, and that's part of what our mission is here, is to support these local farmers.
Yeah, I always find it really interesting that people's expectation of food is that it should be so cheap. And, you know, when I was buying eggs at whatever it was, $2 or $3 a dozen, and then someone suggested I spend $6 a dozen, I thought that seemed ridiculous. And then it dawned on me, it's like, you know, 15, 20, 25 cents an egg. It's nothing. It's really nothing when you think about it. It's just a shift in perspective. And then the other perspective is, oh, well, what made the first egg so cheap to begin with? And
right.
and then realizing that is such poor quality, and those poor chickens were, you know, tortured in such a way that I didn't want to participate. In fact, Portia made a really good point earlier, which was that, you know, I was vegetarian for several years, and then when I wanted to switch away, the reason I became vegetarian is because we take such terrible care of our animals, and I didn't want to be eating those diseased, tortured animals. And then I found out, when I realized that it wasn't actually good for my personal health, that I could do both. I could have the really good quality food, and it was also good for the animals, and everybody wins. And that's one of the things I really find so wonderful about all of it, is that, you know, what's good for the animals is good for us and tastes even more delicious than anything that you could buy, you know, of other quality. So
it's like many things. Many things that have happened in our world in the past, you know, 20, 30, 50 years have been slow degradations in quality, you know, whether it's products or food or really so many other, or leadership, where time goes by and we just don't necessarily notice that we've been absorbing something that is of such low quality and thus really not serving its intended purpose of, you know, creating a system that flourishes, and especially with our physical health. And we're seeing that evidently, you know, all over the place with, you know, alarming rates of disease and obesity and all sorts of things in our country, that, you know, perhaps people are beginning to slowly, you know, make some correlations to the degradation in quality of our foods. Because, you know, I would think that eggs or beef or whatever that was being raised, what, 80 years ago, before so much of this, you know, mechanization and mass industry production of all these things, were certainly better than today. So,
yes. Martin, I'd like to put in, you had mentioned how you explain to people that, you know, once they're catching on that organic is good, then how do you explain, like, sort of this beyond, this other side, and how do you justify the pricing, and how do you get someone excited by this? And I just wanted to point out that what I've found with people who have come to us, it's a hard transition. None of this is easy. You have to look at your pocketbook. You have to make decisions about the way you live your life, how you're going to shop. Everything is changing, and those are all hard things. But once you think about how you feel when you're eating one way, and then afterwards, how you feel after you've eaten another way. And I really, that is the testimonial I hear more. And sometimes it's as simple as someone coming to one of our full moon feasts, eating a meal, and saying, you know what, I felt good for 3 days after that meal. What is it that you put in that food? And to me, that is proof positive that what we're doing is something very important. We're letting people see that there is a difference, and that the only way you're going to feel it is by truly experiencing it. And then you can, as Jessica mentioned before, start experiencing it on whatever level you want, as customer, as a person who wants to start this type of thing, or as a person who just wants to learn, how do you buy, who do you buy from, where do you source these good foods, and why are they important?
Are you
I just want to throw it.
Go ahead.
I just want to throw in as a follow-up to that. It's such a good point that Portia just made, and I was just out watching the customers pick up their food this morning, and I saw this customer who came up to me a couple weeks ago, and she said that, you know, for years she suffered with chemical sensitivities and sensitivities, and she basically got to the point where she couldn't eat anything, and she couldn't ever go out, and she started trying our food, and it's been working great for her. And it's not that, you know, we do, you know, that was something that was on our radar necessarily, to make food that was going to work for people with, you know, chemical sensitivities. But I think just because our approach is so, you know, home-like and so honest and so clean, that, you know, it's working for her. And that's just exactly the kind of thing. I mean, I think almost everybody has that experience that Porsche is describing, of when they start to eat these real foods and these nutrient-dense foods, that they feel so much better. And then you have a huge range of people out there that really can't eat mainstream food anymore for a variety of reasons. And all of a sudden, they're finding that this works for them. And that's one of those things that really makes me feel good about what we're doing, too.
Mm. Well, I've had your food, and it's absolutely delicious. So for all those people out there, what's on the menu? I know it changes a little bit each week, but give us a general sense of the kind of categories that you usually have, and then give us a sense of what's on the menu this week.
Well, I have a brochure in front of me, and I'd love to go ahead and give a rundown, and then Jessica can supplement that. Basically, each week we have about 9 items that are rotating, and we keep those as fresh and seasonal and as exciting as we possibly can. We're doing a beef minestrone soup this week. We've got fresh green beans in it. We've got beautiful purple bell peppers. We're going to be putting our Marin Sun Farms beef. We use our very it's a slow simmered and really wonderful broth. All of our broths, we also sell, in addition to soups that are and stews that are made with broth, we sell our standard pantry items, which include broths that have nothing added, and those are bone rich. They're mineral-rich bone broths made with our locally pastured animals. We have chicken and beef broth often. We then go ahead and do, we make the menu sort of match. Like we've got some wonderful fresh, we're going to do a locavore salad. Jessica was so excited about this. Got the full barrel at Belly Farms, these wheat berries from them, and some beautiful Juliet tomatoes from, I think, from their farm also. So we're going to do two from them, and then we're going to put that together with fresh basil, and that's going to be a locavore salad, which is something that is made, everything's been bought within a 100-mile radius, very close by. And that's quite a challenge when it comes to grain, so we're very excited about that. We're going to be doing, one of my favorites. I'll go straight to the dessert because that's my favorite. We use a lot of whey in some of our fermented beverages. We do these wonderful beverages. And the byproduct of the whey is yogurt because we drain yogurt to get our whey. And we're going to be making a yogurt cheese cheesecake. It's a live culture cheesecake. It's just phenomenal. So it's raw. It's made with our pastured egg yolks, yogurt cream, and a bit of sweetener, generally agave or raw honey, depending what we can get our hands on. And the local raw honey is what we're going for this week. And then we're going to top it with fresh figs. And we put in that to add, for the nutrient density, we add a little bit of gelatin to gel it. And it's amazing. So you can eat that for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. It's not just a sweet treat for dessert. It's going to nourish you all the way through. The other products we carry are cereals, coconut candies. We do we sell sprouted flour so that it's easier for you to digest. We sell a lot of cultured vegetables. In fact, Jessica, it would be great if you talked about our sauerkraut.
Yeah, absolutely. So we got these crocks from Germany. They're these beautiful big 30-liter ceramic crocks, which are, the traditional way to make sauerkraut. They work really well. They've got these stones that go in on the top and then a lid that creates a perfect environment for culturing sauerkraut over a long period of time. So we do lots of different cultured vegetables. This week we actually do have like a very classic German sauerkraut with juniper berries. We also did something last week which we called Red Zinger Sour Reuben, which had beets and gold turnips and carrots in it, and also cultured in a similar way. This next coming week we're going to do a mixed summer vegetable pickle crock, so it'll have cucumbers and beans and carrots and red peppers, and all of that's already been pickling in there, and so we'll jar that up. And so, yeah, those are really good for you, full of beneficial bacteria, and also a great way to use local produce and to preserve it in a way that doesn't, kill the enzymes and all of that. And then we also do some nice things with vegetables, too. We're in summertime this week. In addition to the beef minestrone, we're doing a vegetarian soup that is a cream of summer squash, but we'll actually use coconut milk so that, we have a lot of people who have sensitivities to dairy, and so we try to do, as many things as we can dairy-free because it's just people, we've so abused dairy in this country that a lot of people have a hard time with it. So so that's going to feature where, we're getting 4 cases of yellow summer squash from a great farm called Alba, and we'll be featuring that along with the wheat berry salad. We're doing a baked polenta with greens. It'll have lacinato kale and dandelion from Route 1 and Sierra Nevada cheddar cheese. And we're going to do a bolognese meat sauce with, again, grass-fed beef, and we put some organ meats in there, which is really good in terms of the nutrient density. I mean, really, every week it's something fantastic.
It sounds like you're having a lot of fun, too.
We have fun.
It's like you're in this big playground, and you get to create all these yummy, nutritious foods for a lot of people that you support and care about. And I imagine, as you were touching on earlier, that that people get healthier when they start eating this way. And I also wanted to ask you, are there any anecdotes or are you noticing that people are becoming more curious about just their overall health in other areas of their life, even, or perhaps they're going home and getting curious about maybe, you know, how do I make one of those dishes that I learned about, you know, down there, or how do I be a little bit more, you know, broad in my awareness of the food I'm taking in and how I'm living my life.
I'd love to talk on that for a moment. We get a lot of volunteers who come to us because they've been exposed to the Weston A. Price Foundation or Sally Fallon, or maybe they've simply read Jessica's book, which has inspired them greatly. And often a lot of these traditional foods that we are actually making, they really deserve a group of people. They deserve community. And so you'll get someone who is like, you know, I've been making this bone broth, and then I did this, and I did that. And honestly, it's 8 hours a day, 10 days a week, and there's not 10 days in a week. So they're running around like mad women or men, and they are cooking to create this type of healthful food, but the time is just almost impossible to keep up with. How do you do a 48-hour bone broth without letting it go dry? How do you do these things? And then in your home kitchen, you can only make a small amount. So the beautiful thing is that we do get people who come to us and say, you know, I want to learn how to do this more. I'll do some of these things at home. But quite honestly, I like doing it in community here. And I like supporting you by buying it from you. And you know, it's really neat to see people grow. And then also some people buy things just like they may not buy the menu items each week. They might buy just the staples and then create their own creations at home. So it's great for both people who cook and who are willing to take on these really heavy tasks of figuring out first to source your bones and then to make your bone broth. I mean, these are daunting things when we come from a land of opening a can that you buy on a shelf. It's a very different way.
Definitely. What kind of people do you have? What kind of customers do you have? Are they mostly working people? Are they families?
Jessica, do you want to try that?
Okay, well, we have a wide range. We have a lot of parents with small children who I think that just makes sense, is that they need as much support as they can. And, you know, they're running around and very, very busy, and I think the CSK works really well for them in terms of, you know, supplementing what they're already doing at home in terms of cooking and giving them lots of healthy food. We also have lots of people who've had health problems, you know, people who are in, you know, recovery from serious diseases or have had other health challenges that have realized that diet is going to be a crucial part of their healing process. And then we've got people who are, you know, just turned on by the philosophy, the, you know, the sort of the nourishing traditions approach, and it makes sense to them, and they haven't gotten ill yet, but they don't want to get ill, and they want to, you know, shift their lifestyle into something, you know, more proactive, more positive, and they're willing to, you know, expand their minds a little bit and their lifestyle a little bit to do something alternative. So we get a lot of people like that too. Lots of families. I would say that's probably one of our biggest demographics. But definitely, you know, it's not one thing that I'm really happy about is that it's not elitist, because I think people, you know, worry if they see higher prices that something is the province of the rich. But I think what Portia said about the time that's required to really make these nutrient dense healthy foods can be extensive, and you actually just sit down and take a look at the time that you would spend, you realize that what we're offering has great value.
Absolutely. And the cost is something that, as I was mentioning before, you need to look at your whole life spectrum. Where am I spending my money? What am I spending my money on? And then how can I use, I mean, part of your budget, which may be for supplements, and your supplements may not be actually working. And could you put some of that money towards your food? And I think a lot of people have been doing that and finding that the nutrients are coming from their food, and spending, instead of spending $100 extra on supplements that may or may not work, to putting that money towards food and finding that that really is benefiting them and they're really feeling the benefits. And again, the proof is in how you're feeling. And I can't tell you how many people feel energized and excited by eating this way.
Right.
I want to point out one other thing. I want to highlight something that Portia mentioned earlier that people might not have caught. But you don't have to, unlike a community-supported agriculture box, you don't have to get a box every week, and you don't get the same box as, say, another family. We made a decision early on that people needed to be able to, you know, pick and choose among the items that we have, and that it was just going to be too hard if people, you know, go on vacation or they don't want something every week to just do a box, that everybody got the same box and everybody got it every week. So even though we call it, you know, it is a community-supported kitchen and has all these aspects that we've been talking about, you have a huge amount of choice. And so we have, you know, over 1,000 people who are registered with us as subscribers, and some of them order every week, and some of them, this is like the basic way that they feed their family. But there's other people that order occasionally. There's people who just get pantry items, and still do the bulk of their cooking at home. So there's a wide range of ways that you can, support us. You don't. It doesn't have to be that this is your meal plan.
Right.
Yeah, I really appreciate that people can, you know, can get involved and come and learn and get a few things and just begin, no matter where they are. And, you know, it can be a complete transition, or it can just be a toe in the water of a really healthy bastion of cooking and food and learning that you guys are have created over there, and that you're serving the community. And I love that, just, you know, no matter where you are in your health regimen or your learning, there's so much to learn by, you know, checking out Three Stone Hearth and, you know, trying out some of the foods, seeing what they're doing, how are they thinking, you know, what's this all about? Because really, with Healthful Living and the show Reality Sandwich, it's our prime intent to just, you know, keep pointing people in directions of profound information that's extremely healthy. And the more that we just kind of put our toe in that water, the better off we'll be, and allow ourselves to just begin to get some of that healthy feeling back and experience it. And that's really what affects all positive change. Julie?
Yeah, and a lot of that about healthful living, in our opinion, is about sustainable living and living that's good for the planet. So you have food that's good for the animals, food that's obviously good for people, food that's good for the environment, food that's not going to be putting toxic pesticides into the ground, all sorts of good for the community, all of those kind of areas that we talk about in healthful living. This model really helps to support and sustain the health of everything. I can't think of, and this is kind of the model we typically try to go by, is a particular process or substance or organization pretty much sort of nourishing all these different areas, where you don't have to destroy one area to support the others. And that's kind of what this whole wonderful concept is about, is just being able to support all of these important systems so that it's actually sustainable for the long run and for the health of all the individuals involved.
Very well said, Julie. I mean, in fact, you guys are really, I think one of the reasons we have so much affinity for you is that you truly are a healthful living organization. You're serving the health of the mind, health of body. You're serving health of spirit. You're serving health of environment, for sure. You're very much serving health of community. And you're also serving health of economy, in that you're aiming to support those in your local environment that are, in turn, supporting you. And that collectively, together, each of us as individuals, be conscious about, you know, how we're being in the world and serving all of those six systems. The healthier we will be as individuals, healthier will be our brothers and our sisters and really everyone else in our environment, and serve the collective whole of life as best we can.
So,
hey.
Yeah.
So in our closing few minutes, I'd like to just hear, you know, any thoughts from both of you, just kind of about the major heads up that we're talking about here. The word I keep hearing over and over again in this conversation is nourishment and nutrition and nutrient dense. So let's just make a few final pointers on that focus, as well as perhaps any heads up you may want to throw out there about some of the perhaps egregious offenders out in our regular world that we're not necessarily conscious of.
Well, because you have so many, parents and so forth that you help. One of the easiest answers to that I would say is cold cereals, which so many Americans and especially kids eat every day. These extruded cold cereals, and the data on these, you know, even you know, the organic or the so-called alternative cold cereals is really kind of frightening. They seem to have some special sort of toxic effects on the body that are really should be of concern to parents. And one of the things that I'm really proud of that we do here is we played with the Sally Fallon's recipe in Eat Fat, Lose Fat for a cold cereal, and we came up with two great cold cereals that we make. We make one or both every week. One is a cinnamon oat crunch that I believe Portia spearheaded developing that recipe, and the other is a corn crunch, which I had been working on. And so those are baked cereals, and then we bake the dough, the batter, and then we cut it into small pieces, and then we dehydrate it. We've got this large dehydrator, and so we take all the moisture out, and then you just pour that into a bowl and put some raw milk on top, and it makes a great alternative to these extruded cold cereals. So I want to make a plug for those because I'm really proud that we're doing it. They're really delicious, and I really think that cold cereals are one of the hidden villains out there. You know, everybody thinks about soft drinks and French fries and you know, ho-hos or whatever, but they don't think twice about giving their kids cold cereal, and I think that's really something to be concerned about.
Sure, and as a nutrition consultant, not only all of those things you talked about, but just simply the how can you have nutrients for your brain that you need, you know, a child that has a fast metabolism to go to school every day and to eat breakfast at 7:30 and then not get something probably till 11:30. The brain can't really be fueled very efficiently on all of that carbohydrate that's just so turned so immediately to sugar as well. So what other types of things do you have that are make good breakfast foods?
Well, our pastured eggs are phenomenal, of course. And as Jessica mentioned, the raw dairy, which we do carry Claravelle raw milk. Often we're able to get their cream sometimes. Those in combination are fantastic. I personally eat the soups and stews for my breakfast. I love having a rich mineral broth for breakfast, and I've always eaten rice and kimchi for breakfast. So although those may not sound like a normal, quote-unquote, breakfast foods, they're terrifically energizing and really delicious.
And you have that great baked, don't you have a really good, often that baked egg dish?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know
like
if you have
a frittata.
Yeah, every once in a while I hear you. I've had before. You have these different kind of like a frittata. It's sort of almost like a quiche without the crust.
Yes, we do one of those almost every week, so those can make a good breakfast. We also do a hot cereal, so there's an oatmeal that's prepared that all you have to do is just warm it up. So if you want to get into the hot cereal thing, and you know, the one thing I just want to say about our cold cereal is that. You know, it may, you know, depending on the person, it may or may not be a good thing to start your day with. But one thing that we've found is that because it's got coconut oil in it and because it's not too sweet and because the grains are, you know, properly processed through a long soaking time before being baked, at least for myself on those mornings when I really am in a rush and I just really do just want a little bowl of cereal with some, you know, some, of course, full-fat raw milk on it, I find it's remarkably sustaining. So in general, I kind of think of my favorite time to eat cold cereal is like at 11 o'clock at night when, you know, as like a late night snack. And
right.
I just think that, you know, a higher protein, sort of higher fat breakfast tends to hold people better. But we were really surprised when we first started making this cereal that when we would eat it, it actually is much more sustaining. And I think, you know, the coconut oil really helps. And, you know, it's not a low fat thing.
Sure.
Well, let's wrap up the show right there on that wonderful thought about having foods that are wholesome, nutritious, and actually sustain us and keep us going as living and energetic beings. Portia and Jessica from Three Stone Hearth, thank you both so much for spending an hour with us today and informing us about the true nature of quality of foods and all the wonderful things that you're cooking up over there at Three Stone Hearth Community Kitchen and how folks can check in with you at the, I guess the easiest way to find you would be at threestonehearth.com?
Yes, I would like to spell it out if that's okay. It is www.3, Hearth. It's HEARTH.com. 3stonehearth.com. All of our information is on the web, and it is a web-based ordering system. So feel free to browse. We've got all kinds of information on there, informational stuff, our menu. Please check it out.
And you're in Berkeley, and you can people can either pick it up or they can have a box delivered, correct?
Correct.
All right. Well, thank you both for being with us today. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your work, too, in getting these ideas out there to people.
Thanks, Jessica. Bye.
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 Well, this is always an education, and it's always wonderful to hear from people that are so passionate about creating quality products, quality foods, and nourishing us as best they can. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical and clinical hypnotherapist with Health for Living. This has been Reality Sandwich. We're on every Thursday at noon. I'm here today with
Julie Matthews, and you can get more information on this show or any past shows and hear it for free download online at realitysandwichradio.com. And if you want any information about Martin or myself, you can find us at healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.
We'll be back next week.
One, two, three.